@Soycle. Join the conversation, 844-967-2789. And a reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. Tim Miller, his title for his piece on this is, "No, you do not have a constitutional right to post Hunter Biden's dick pic on Twitter."
The story just kind of went limp.
And on that note, we're taking a break.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us today during our noon hour, second hour, your lunch hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Later in the hour, we are going to PolitiFact decided to get the facts correct on the difference between a drag show and a strip show because a certain former governor conflated the two. So we're gonna talk about what PolitiFact decided to be very clear on.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and then there's also right now you could get paid to eat cheese.
I'm so there.
Right?
Oh yeah.
$1,000. So we'll talk about that. But to start off this this hour, we are welcoming back Frank Face Vilas, who is the Native American Affairs reporter for the USA Today Wisconsin publications. And I think it was back over the summer we had him on, but he does so much interesting reporting on so many historic, like both current events and historical events when it comes to Native issues in Wisconsin. And the one that caught my eye that I want to talk about first with you today you published this earlier this month, and it's a report, a national report that I think when I read your article, it was like not surprising because, you know, racism, but also like seeing the actual hard numbers of what it is still shocking. So I wanted to have you on to talk about that report and what it looks like in Wisconsin. And so welcome back, Frank.
Hi, thank you for having me. Thank you for that introduction. So this report is, you know, it still shocks a lot of readers. They write to me, they email me. It is still shocking to some people. But the MacArthur Foundation found that nationally, Indigenous people, the incarceration rates for them are much higher and disproportionate than for other ethnic groups. And there's still a lot of research to be done, the report states. And then here in Wisconsin, we had the report a couple of years ago. We sent out a public records request to certain county jails. And in certain counties, like in Vilas County up north where the Lac du Flambeau reservation is, the county has a population of about 15% Native Americans. But the county jail there at times could be, you know, more than half of Native Americans inmates.
Yeah.
So it's very, you know, shocking to a lot of people.
Well, and that was because I think it's, and this is why I feel like your reporting is so important, because a lot of times when we talk about the criminal justice system, the imagery that comes to mind is Black populations, and certainly when we're down in Milwaukee, that is the disproportionate amount of incarceration of, you know, different zip codes down here. But I think for people who live in central northern Wisconsin, it's similar stats. It's just a different community. And that was like why I wanted to highlight this, because it's still the racism, because what you were saying, I mean, at least what it said in the report was that it's not only that there's a higher rate of incarceration, it's also like harsher sentences. Mm-hmm. And so as far as, I mean, is this stuff beyond the MacArthur Foundation doing this report in your reporting, was this something that you already basically knew?
Right. Yeah. It's something we've been working on. We found out a couple of years ago. It was pretty shocking to us at first as well, but, and you're right. There has been a lot of research done in urban areas with Black populations. And, some of those, there hasn't been a lot of research in rural areas where reservations are, but the researchers suspect it's the, you know, same type of racism where, where people of color are targeted more by police, you know, such as, you know, in urban areas, you know, white people or white kids smoke weed or have, you know, public intoxication just as much as people of color do. But people of color are targeted more by police. You know, you don't see, you know, them enforcing public intoxication around university campuses on the weekends as much as, you know, like, you know, urban neighborhoods. But yeah, and you know, and there's been a few individuals have told me that up in northern Wisconsin that they're even afraid to put a dream catcher or a feather to hang it from their visor in their vehicle, because that's one way that police can kind of target them. So a lot of them have resorted to kind of taping it on their windshield, because you know that's technically an infraction to Wisconsin driving codes. You're not supposed to have, you know, anything blocking the windshield, and you know, and these feathers are usually small, you can see right through them, but that's, you know, one way, you know, people are telling me that they're targeted up north.
So one of the things, it was as much looking at current data, but the report also had like trying to put things in like a historical context, correct?
Right. Just looking at the intergenerational trauma and just being forced on reservations in the first place, a lot of communities have you know it's, you know, no shock that there's a lot of alcohol abuse and drug use on some of these reservations as a result of being forced onto these reservations, and you know, their culture taken away, forceful assimilation throughout the generations. So a lot of these offenses are drug related, and the federal government has a historical context of oppressing Native American peoples throughout the country. I know some readers have, you know, told me, you know, don't do the crime if you can't do the time, you know, but you know, that doesn't explain, you know, the higher rate at which they're targeted and its historical context. I know some of the recommendations, you know, instead of just, you know, putting people in jail, they have, you know, traditional ways to kind of help people where a young person who has, you know, been doing drugs, they can sit down with an elder and get counseling. You know, they have, you know, and so one of the recommendations the report is making is to give more jurisdiction and authority to the tribal courts and to the tribal court system to help people on their reservation rather than just, you know, throwing them in county jails. So yeah, that's one way. But it definitely needs more research, and that's something we're going to look at more later on this year as well.
That's great. We're talking to Frank Vizviles, who is the Native American Affairs reporter for the USA Today Wisconsin publications. And Jane, you had a question?
I did, Frank. We were talking last hour about Governor Evers wanting to invest a lot more money into mental health services all across the state. And we were just mentioning how rural Wisconsin already really has a problem with healthcare providers and mental health providers and certainly child psychologists and things like that. It's got to be even worse for people who are on native lands in Wisconsin.
Right. And it does vary from reservation to reservation, but a lot of the tribes, you know, they do have their own health clinics, but it's, you know, usually what happens outside the reservation as well. Another, you know, surprising why these rates are so shocking to people is because it, you know, like in Vilas County and a lot of these rural counties, the tribes are the largest employers of both native and non-native peoples. So they're out there providing to the economy, and they have large school systems and healthcare systems, but definitely more funding is always needed, and they are definitely underfunded by the federal government in most cases.
You mentioned hearing from readers. What is, you know, I think you are, like we said, you are not only the current Native American affairs reporter for USA Today, you're also the first one, right?
Right.
And so it's, you know, the first time that there's a specific reporter covering this beat of, because we talked about the last time you were here, Wisconsin has, as far as east of the Mississippi, the largest Native population in any state. And it's a 12 different tribes? Yep.
12 tribes, yes.
12 tribes. And so as far as readers taking the energy and the time to reach out to you? Is it mostly positive and people appreciating your reporting, or does some of the, like you said, the, if you don't do the crime, if you can't do the time. So is it, do you feel supported in your reporting from readership?
Yes, I would say probably about 75% of the readers are very supportive of the information, you know, and, you know, this is very educational work a lot too, because, you know, just shining a light, you know, people, you know, not knowing that reservations were even still here in Wisconsin. But some of it is, you know, critical and, you know, but, you know, it's, you know, some of them, you know, I do try to take their points as well. So, you know, such as in this next report, I do want to address that, you know, don't do the crime. If you don't want to do the time, I want to try to debunk that myth more. So, and that's definitely what I'll focus on more in the next report. So,
yeah. I mean, and part of that is also doing a journalist, because there's obviously other people I work with down at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel who they can't ever get anything. They can't make everyone happy, which is not your job. Your job is to educate and inform people. And so I find so much of what you write so interesting as far as just the different stories and the different things that I would have never known. And one of which is what we're going to talk about when we come back from the next break, which I think this is a much happier topic. And I think it is so cool. So the Ojibwe Olympic Games are returning to Wisconsin, to Madeline Island, after the government banned them 150 years ago. So I think this is so cool. And I'm so excited for you to be here to tell us more about it and kind of the expectations, especially because it sounds like this warm winter might cause issues of people trying to get to Madeline Island. And so we're going to take a break right now. But when we come back, Frank Vasilis will still be here and talk about these games. That sounds so fun. All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Frank Vasilis, who is the Native Americans Affairs reporter, a reporter for the USA Today Wisconsin publications. And we're going to talk about a different kind of Olympics than that music. But you put this out, I think, this week, as far as the Ojibwe Olympic Games are returning to Wisconsin after being banned 150 years ago. And I just think this sounds so cool. So what can you give us more details about what this is and kind of the history of it?
Sure. Yeah. There's a group on Madeline Island dedicated to kind of revolving the Ojibwe culture there. And it was banned by the federal government under the pretense that, you know, there was gambling involved. But, you know, during that time, the federal government was kind of banning all cultural events from indigenous peoples across the country. But Madeline Island and the city of La Pointe there was the capital of the Ojibwe Nation, and which is, you know, includes Wisconsin and parts of the U.S. and Canada now. And they would, you know, have these games there where they would throw these javelins, and then, you know, and they're called snow snakes, and before they were used for hunting before the rifle came along, but they kept the skills to just for these games, and this is how they would settle clan disputes, some of their cases, and yeah, they would do this every year, and the governments kind of released the ban in the 1970s, but these games haven't come back until last year when a group of individuals decided to bring it back. It was just a handful, then word got around and 100 people showed up to the island, and now organizers are concerned that 500 or 1,000 people might show up this year. So
because that was what I've read the article, it's like you'd think that if you're throwing this event, 500, 1,000 people, infinitely increasing the size of your event from one year to the next would be a good thing. But because we've had such a warm winter, I guess apparently even up in Lake Superior, because we talked last week that like Michigan's doesn't have a lot of ice on it, but apparently Lake Superior also doesn't have a lot of ice on it. So people are worried about driving on the ice right now to get people to the island.
Right. Yeah. I've been following the pulse of one of the organizers, and he's posting pictures on Facebook. It's kind of icy, but it's still there's still a lot of water there. It's not really safe to drive on right now. Last year it was deemed safe on February 3rd, for about a little bit over a week that was deemed safe to drive on. But there's other ways to get there. They have snowmobiles or small boats and snowshoes, but they can only take a few people at a time there. So they're worried about if hundreds of people show up, how they would get them there. So
well, and it's where are they all going to stay too, Frank? Because La Pointe is tiny.
Yes. There's one hotel open on the island during the games, and that's fully booked for elders and coaches of the games now. So yeah, they would have to stay on the mainland somewhere, miles and miles away.
And so, you said the javelin throwing. Are there other games, or what is the variety of games that will be played or competitions?
It's mostly with this javelin throw. Okay. They're throwing for distance and accuracy. They're trying to throw them through hoops. Sometimes they could go as far as a few hundred yards. But if it's ice is smooth enough, such as across a lake or a river, they can go as far as a mile. I know some tribes had adopted the that technique to send messages during the wintertime.
Wait, how does it go a mile?
Just keep on sliding. If you keep it straight and there's nothing to stop it, it just keeps going. So
that's crazy.
That is crazy. Oh. And so and one of the other things, it worked out well because when we were talking about having you come on, because yesterday was also, in speaking of Ojibwe, that I saw on the Wisconsin Historical Society. They have a great little page of on this day in history. And sometimes it's items that are not that interesting, but sometimes they're really interesting. And so yesterday, not today, but yesterday in 1983, it was the anniversary of the Ojibwe treaties being reaffirmed. And so could you tell us a little bit more about what that meant for the tribe?
Sure. So basically, when the Ojibwe ceded their territory in northern Wisconsin to the U.S. government, they wrote in their treaty that they would still be able to hunt and fish off reservation in the ceded territory and in the Northwoods. But for 100 years or so, the state of Wisconsin kind of ignored that or didn't know about it until these activists, I think it was in the 70s, intentionally got fined by the DNR for hunting off reservation during the off season. They went all the way to the federal court, and sure enough, the courts agreed. It's here in this treaty, and the treaty is still valid. And that kind of sparked these walleye wars, where protesters, where non-native protesters, where they started being aggressive towards spear fishers, especially during the springtime. They would spearfish walleye on these lakes, and then they would fear that the Ojibwe were getting an unfair portion or getting them first, and they have police there, and there was a lot of shooting incidents, bolt ramming. There's a book about this called The Walleye War. It's very interesting, and people on the reservations in Lac des Flambeaux and La Poudrerie, this is still very etched in their memory, and they're they still talk about it a lot, and still part of the history, even though it's not really taught too much in public schools in Wisconsin, which is a shame. But It is a big part of Wisconsin history.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you got coming in the last minute? Any interesting stories we should look out for that you're working on?
Sure. Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, we're going to look further into those incarceration rates and then also into education and Act 31, where the state, you know, seems not to be living up to its mandate to, you know, have more education about Indigenous peoples in public schools. So we're going to look at who's accountable for that and why it's not, you know, being done properly. So
awesome. All right. Well, Frank Vice-Velas is the Native American Affairs reporter for USA Today, Wisconsin, and all the different publications. We will link these articles that we talked about today. And also you can subscribe to his newsletter on First Nations people. Thank you so much for spending time today with us, Frank.
Thank you for having me.
All right. When we come back, PolitiFact. What is a drag show? We define it. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matinere is on the board. We are on the Civic Media Network across Wisconsin and halfway through the show.
Yeah, it went fast.
It's going really fast today.
It is.
You know, PolitiFact, I feel like it's the part of the Poynter Institute, and it is, they do national fact checks on things that are said by politicians, and you know, similar to like Snopes as far as taking the very much objective facts.
Is this true or not?
Is this true or not? And they give it a rating. We did a lot of these because Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's partners is their partner for Wisconsin fact checking. And we were doing a lot of these in the lead up to the election and trying to get the accurate information out there as far as things that Tony Evers had said, or Tim Michaels had said, or Mandela Barnes, or Ron Johnson, and sometimes they were true, sometimes they were very false.
Sometimes they were just stupid.
And sometimes it was pants on fire. I think it's the Washington Post that does the three Pinocchios.
Yeah.
So I probably am not the first person to think of this, but one of the, and I probably could not get Journal Sentinel to do this, although we did get Bill Glauber. Veteran reporter Bill Glauber to do a TikTok, and it went out yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So we're very excited about having more people put themselves on camera and summarize their stories. But on TikTok, there is a filter. So there's like different things you can do on TikTok that change your face, or you like put a green screen background or do special effects without having to know fancy soft, like editing software.
Okay, so make it easy for you.
And so, you know, there's different apps that like change your face and make you look, it's like how Snapchat was, and makes you look goofy or whatever. And there's one that if you look straight onto the camera, it looks normal. Then as soon as you turn your head, it's a Pinocchio nose. And I was like, there's something here to play with in the PolitiFact of when it's like pants on fire wrong and this reading it aloud of what it is and then turning your face. And
oh, I love that.
Lying. But anyways, I digress. So, Mr. Scott Walker.
Former governor.
He's the president of YAF now. Is he still doing that?
As far as it's young Republican, isn't it?
His relevance to making statements, public statements that people listen to. So on January 5th, 2023, on Twitter, he wrote, "Let's be clear, drag shows are strip shows."
Excuse me?
"Let's be clear, drag shows are strip shows." And go ahead.
Drag queens are stripping?
That's what he's saying. Ah. Let's be clear that these two things are the same thing.
Has he been there?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
And PolitiFact, this has been fact-checked and reported on by Laura Schulte. That is false. That is false. And it's not just false of us like arguing about what family-friendly drag shows are and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, this is just categorically false. Says the very objective, it is our job to use facts to say yes or no, true or not, It is false. No drag shows are not the same as strip shows.
No.
I just love that they spent, they're like, let's put this stamp on it as far as really, it's not opinion. It is fact that drag shows are not strip shows. And we'll get into some, because I actually learned some of the things in reading the full article. But what's really funny is when asked whether he had ever attended either a strip show or a drag show, Walker did not respond.
At all?
I'm sure it was on Twitter, so he just ignored whatever. Because this wasn't, if he made this claim on Twitter, it's not something like he was being interviewed by a reporter. Unless they've specifically reached out to him and were like, hey, we're going to run this article. Do you want to respond?
I'm just curious.
But it's, what I found out is drag, the term drag is a term derived from the ancient Greek theater. It's a Greek word meaning masquerade, and its roots have remained in theatrical performances, always like involving cross-dressing, which we've talked about before with Shakespeare, especially when women couldn't be actors, and so men had to play women. And also the drag term comes from how ridiculously big the costumes were, and they would drag on the floor.
Oh, wow.
And so it's in the difference of what is a drag show, it's not people taking their clothes off. If anything, they're wearing pretty elaborate costumes. Sometimes the banter can get raunchy.
And, yeah.
You know.
And naughty.
And
yes.
Naughty. And sometimes it doesn't. And it's sometimes lip syncing and dancing. And sometimes it's stand-up comedy and storytelling or bingo nights. Like, it's not a strip show.
Well, what I find amazing about the entire thing, I mean, just think about it. As you said, they put together very elaborate, very involved artifice to pull off this drag character.
Yes.
And so why on earth would they strip that away when the whole point was to manufacture this artificial person?
Exactly. Well, and like we always, I think we typically think of drag as men, cis men or trans men dressing up as a woman. But there's drag kings in the same way that there's drag queens. And so I remember, now you have to remember, I went to Berkeley and I was also involved in the like Vagina Monologues crew, the sexual health education crew, like
pretty open-minded,
very open-minded. And so there was like a drag night. I was on campus, but it was at like a local small theater. And like our group of friends went and like, that was the first time I had seen very amateur, but like drag kings. And it was women who had dressed up as men. And it was still dancing and acting and a character and all this stuff. But I think that there's a drag king group in Milwaukee, because I saw on the Facebook neighborhood group that we're on, someone had posted about their show. And it was like, oh, our neighbor's a performer and stuff. And so this is, it's about a character. It's about performing. And versus, so this is what Merriam-Webster, I love that this is where they went to, is Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
This, you mean PolitiFact went to Merriam-Webster.
Drag is, quote, entertainment in which performers caricature or challenge gender stereotypes, as by dressing in clothing that is stereotypical of another gender, by using exaggeratedly gendered mannerisms, or by combining elements of stereotypically male and female dress, and often wear elaborate or outrageous costumes. Compared to, what is a strip show? Merriam-Webster says, to strip is to take off clothes or to remove one's clothes gradually piece by piece in a seductive or provocative manner, especially to accompaniment of music. And, you know, and then also under strip, like strip, it's not just like a strip club. It's what am I thinking of? Why can't I think of the word?
I don't know. Stripping.
Burlesque. Burlesque.
Oh, burlesque. Yeah.
Which is burlesque typically is not fully nude.
No, it was all about the tease.
It's all about the tease. And so they're ruling. Not that it matters, because the people who want to believe that these drag shows are grooming children probably don't read PolitiFact. But
I think that's a fair bet.
But they are not the same thing. They are not grooming your children.
And they're not stripping.
And they don't deserve violent threats, when there's an announcement that some sort of show is going to happen. You know what's really funny is because then when, and like a school talent show, when, you know, young straight boys who are funny and, you know, confident enough to dress up as cheerleaders, and everyone thinks that's funny, right? It's like the football team dresses up and performs Britney Spears, and that's hilarious, and that's totally fine. But if you call it, but don't call that drag.
Well, and again, we've talked about this before as well. You can't do cabaret anymore because the main character is asexual.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do One Enchanted Evening. What's it? South Pacific. You couldn't do South Pacific anymore because that has a bunch of army guys dressing up in coconuts and grass skirts as women.
What's the, which is it, 12th Night, where Rosalind dresses as a man?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's one of the 12 stories, like that. Well, how they always say that there's only like 12 main stories that just get retold in different ways again and again and again. I mean, like cross-dressing and pretending that you're, it's a, I auditioned for that movie. She's the Man. It was Amanda Bynes, and she was a girl who dressed as a boy to play on the soccer team. And that was like a mid-aughts movie. I did not get in the movie, but I auditioned for it.
Hilary Swank did that in a movie.
Well, that was part of the movie, though. That was her being a trans man.
Right.
And that she won the Oscar for that.
She did.
What's the movie? What was the name of
Boys
that?
Boys Don't Cry.
Boys Don't Cry, yeah. And so that I feel like is like, oh, this is an actual identity versus a funny ha-ha movie where that's not threatening because it's just a comedy. And versus the violence that is being threatened against East High School and all these different places. I mean, I saw a fairly notorious right-wing talk radio guy because last night was Pride Night at Fiserv. And I don't know if, like, he had reported that there was going to be a drag show at the halftime, which I have not seen any pictures come across to see if there was or there wasn't. But, you know, hard-hitting reporting. But I will say commend in this kind of similar vein, Fiserv has has signed up to be one of the groups that is like a safe house for LGBTQ plus groups. And it's called Safe Space. It's a safe space initiative. And it's basically a place that they put something out that says they are a safe space for people who are LGBTQ and also potential human trafficking victims, that they can help you be able to call the police
if you go there. Yes.
Yeah. And so I will say, like, I appreciate how much I think Fiserv in the Bucks. How it's funny because they're nonpartisan. So as far as their political affiliation to anyone, but like, I feel like you can tell. I mean, granted, Alex Lazary did run as a Democrat. So
there's that.
But yeah, it's a safe harbor. They're now creating a safe harbor for members of the LGBTQ plus community and victims of human trafficking to call for police for assistance. And Milwaukee as a whole rolled out this program last fall. And since they rolled it out, there's 30 different businesses that have signed up. And it's basically, there's a logo that they put in their window as far as signifying that this is a safe place to go, which is interesting because where my mind just went was, remember when we were talking to Sojourner House and we're talking to Carmen, the CEO and executive director over there, and kind of the issues that they've had with businesses putting any kind of domestic violence information in the window.
Yeah.
And so, and maybe, you know, 30 businesses in a town of 500,000 plus people is not a ton, but it would just be interesting to see what some of these businesses say yes to and what they say no to as far as issues. But,
and I just want to throw one little side note in there from my own personal experience. I have been to a couple of drag shows and I went to a strip club once. The strip club was far more traumatizing. At least for me.
Well, I would say the people, I mean, on its face, the people who are so mad about drag shows would never publicly admit that strip clubs are fine.
And that they frequent them?
Yes. But I would say that they're not calling threats in against
strip clubs
in downtown Milwaukee.
Good point.
And there's one that bothers them a lot more than the other one. But all right. Well, when we come back, do you think you could eat cheese and get paid for it? Does that sound like a good deal to you? Because this might be the job for you. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Store. What you looking for? Cheese? I'm cheddar. I'm much better than the rest of these.
Don't speak too fast. You need to get a load of this. I'm Swiss.
All right, white boy. They get the gist.
Got my holes in my body. Then my boy 50 Cent. Curdled on the street. Geneva represent.
Well, Vinny and Louie forgot about the other cheeses.
So welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We got Jane Mattinara picking up fun, cheesy music.
The cheese rap.
The cheese rap.
The cheese rap.
Of course. I bet there's a lot of cheese songs.
You'd be surprised.
I would bet that there is a lot of cheese songs. That's less impressive that you found something there, because I think that's some low-hanging fruit. Some of the other ones you find, though, really specific.
Ow.
No, I'm just saying. Okay. It's a compliment.
All right.
There's other topics that I would never think you'd be able to find a song on.
But cheese is kind of a...
Cheese feels like...
It's an easier one.
Because people love cheese.
That's true. They do. Just want to back up just for a second. We got a couple texts that we want to share with you, and you can always call and or text, and it's the same number, 844-967-2789. Texter from the 323. We were talking about the difference between drag shows and strip shows that former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker apparently said that called drag shows strip shows, right?
He's like, let's be clear. They're the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. A texter from the 323 says the only people taking drag queens' clothes off are Republicans who are doing it in their minds. Oh, and another from the 262. I was at the Bucks game last night and I thoroughly enjoyed the, in quotes, strip show. LOL.
There was a drag show.
There was a drag show.
Yep. I wonder who performed. Because, I mean, I've been to some at This Is It. By Cathedral Square in Milwaukee, which is always so fun. But it'd be interesting to see, because I think it's Trixie Mattel, who's like the very, very, like one of the most famous current drag queens who's from Wisconsin. She's from a small town in Wisconsin. I think she's been on RuPaul, but she's a big deal. And so, all right. Well, let's talk about cheese then.
Yeah.
We're moving on.
This is great.
So this job will pay you $1,000 to eat cheese every night. Not $1,000 per night.
All right.
But it is, it's for a study because, you know, there is some of us, you know, the entire thing of like, remember how Ebenezer Scrooge, when the first ghost visited him and he was convinced that it was just a nightmare because he ate cheese before he went to bed?
Oh, wow.
So basically, there's an entire scientific industry dedicated to figuring out what and if cheese affects your sleep. And so this Sleep Junkie is the name of the company, and Sleep Junkie's website is offering sleep product reviews, think mattresses and bedding, as well as information on how to improve your sleep and health. It's currently seeking out dairy dreamers or a group of people who will receive $1,000 for eating a variety of cheese before hitting the hay every day for 3 months straight.
Is there a certain amount that you have to? I mean, does it have to be the same amount of cheese regardless of variety? I would think
so
if they wanted...
So there is a variety.
Okay.
So before you get too excited, there are some requirements. So all applicants must be over 21.
Okay.
I don't know why it's 21 and not 18 since it's not alcohol.
Got to be careful with the cheese.
Whatever. You also have to have good writing skills because you have to be able to write about and reflect on how your sleep was on the different varieties of cheese.
Keep a diary of sorts.
Yep. And you have to be prepared to be honest about the study and its impact. And of course, you must love sleeping and cheese.
I am so there.
Is most of us, right?
Gosh, they just described me with two phrases.
Maybe this is your new side hustle, Jane.
I think I was born for this.
Because they're looking for people who have a consistent sleep schedule. Is that you?
Certainly more so now.
Okay.
Than it used to be.
Do you sleep alone?
Yes.
You do sleep alone. So there you go. So you have to sleep alone for the duration of the study, and probably better, like, if you are lactose intolerant, you probably should not. I'm not sure they're saying you can't, but for your own reasons.
Yeah, you're doing that at your own risk.
Yeah, I would maybe. I have a great story. I have a buddy who lives in Chicago. He and his wife came up. I think it was the first summer I had moved back, and he came to visit Mike and I in Milwaukee, and we're at lunch. And we had just ordered, and he just like popped out his Lactaid or like his like lactose intolerance pills or whatever those were called. And he goes, "There's no way I'm coming here and not having cheese curds." And just like came prepared. And I do appreciate those lactose intolerant people who are willing to just suck it up sometimes because they're like, "Well, you know what? These are good and I want them.
And I want them. I'm going to eat them."
So if you need an extra $1,000,
only over 3 months, that's not too bad.
3 months. And it sounds like there are, it's not the same kind of cheese every night. It's going to be a variety of different kinds of cheeses, from blue cheese to brie to goat cheese and all of this different stuff. And so applications close February 10th, so you better get moving. We will link this to today's show.
I know what I'm doing right after the show.
Would you do this?
No.
No. You don't like cheese that much?
I love cheese. I would have no problem eating cheese before I went to bed every night for a year.
So why don't you apply?
It's the being disciplined enough to write about it.
Yeah.
That's where I would fail.
Because you got like three jobs here.
There's a couple things going on.
You're already pretty busy. I think that's probably the same reason I couldn't do it is because I'm doing a lot already.
Yes.
But if you would like to do this.
I think what a great opportunity.
I also love that it's Sleep Junkies is the name of the company that is your source for sleep tips and mattress reviews. Like, this is not who I think would be studying the effects of cheese on your sleep when it's like, it's mostly just if it's mostly mattress reviews, I don't understand what this has to do with. I guess they just do a bunch. Best research. Here we go. Mattress quiz, technology and sleep. Best cities for sleep. So yeah, I guess they do publish a fair amount of their own research on top of their mattress reviews.
And how can we be certain that the all-powerful curd lobby is not behind this?
We got invited to go to the National Cheese Championship.
I so want to go.
So we might have to, that's next month.
We gotta start working on logistics.
Logistics, it's in Madison. So figure out if we can either do the show from Madison or if we just like hop in the car as soon as the show's over.
That would be so great.
I went last year and it's pretty, if you've ever wanted to be surrounded by people who've made their entire life cheese, it's like the opposite of how wine snobs are. I mean, they are cheese snobs, but they're very cool. They're like very, very cool. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up this hour. And when we come back, Dr. Mike will be here because it is that time of the week again for Dr. Mike to fix your life and your lineup. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You want to put us in your mouth, and you, don't you? We know you do.
I'm stuck in my ways. I'm stuck in your teeth and on your breath for days.
Flavor than y'all. I make a wicked cheese ball. My hobbies include doing bird call. Cause somebody take over for me.
I'm living large in a condo. If I break a hip, don't put me in a home, bro.
But Pops, you don't even have a hip, though.
Oh.
This is breaking my heart. Just tell them what they want, yo.
No.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.